With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Podcar and welcome to another episode with a special guest. And today is someone that I've known for quite some time, Ewan Robertson. Photographer, is that you? Would we say that that's your complete profession?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
Awesome. I've known you since before you went professional as well, which is amazing. Yeah. I guess what I want to start off with is just to talk about how you first got into photography, all the generic stuff, and then talk about how you became professional.
Wow. Professional is such a loaded word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so hi, first of all.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
When you said that, it kind of got me thinking, like, when I first met you, and I don't even really know. Like,
I guess detour.
Ago. Yeah.
So, 2009.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
Book.
10 years in February, I think it is.
Oh, cool. That's a long time. It's really funny, because when you say 2009, it doesn't seem like 10 years ago.
No.
That's being old, I guess.
Yeah.
So how did I get into photography? I was actually back where I first started learning photography last weekend, which is Porton Cross, which is a tiny wee, I don't know if it's a town or not, but there's a castle there. It's kind of on the west coast near where I grew up. I studied accounts at university in Stirling, and hated it. Like, from pretty much from the end of first year, I was just like, this is crap. So I actually won money on a pub quiz one night when I was at uni, and I bought a camera with the money that I won. Not like a good camera or anything, but just started dicking about with it and taking pictures of pals and stuff and of everything, and just was like, enjoyed it. And like, there was never any idea that it was going to be anything. And then one weekend I was home back in Ayrshire from Stirling, and my cousin, who I'm like the same age as and grew up with, were really, really good friends. He was making a pinhole camera, and he texted me, he's like, oh, I'm making these pinhole cameras, do you want to come and try? So we went and made pinhole cameras out of matchboxes and little tins, and went down to Porton Cross and exposed rolls of film, and then went and got it developed and kind of worked out, and it was just absolutely fascinating. At that point, I had no idea what a pinhole camera was.
To
be able to like make something and that creates photographs so simply, it just like kind of really, really fascinated me. So then I got more and more interested in it, and it kind of spiraled, and went down a bit of a black hole of photography, and got more and more interested in different aspects. And for a long time, it was always just a hobby, and that's like when I started doing the Dieter stuff. It was just a hobby, and like I met Ali at uni, and I only met Weaver afterwards. But
so, for people that don't know who they are, Dieter was a prominent collective, and they obviously did the live events, multimedia aspects, videos, kidnaps of bands, which I think that all needs to come back. And also, so Ali McRae, who went to go on to BBC Radio 1 and various things, and now he's with BBC Radio 3.
BBC 3.
And Weaver. What can you say about Weaver? He is
probably quite a lot.
Yeah, he is such a character. Loves wearing vests, and he is
and shorts.
And he now works for Synergy. So that's a short summary on what they've done.
Probably quite a good summary. When you say kidnaps with no context,
yeah,
it sounds a bit weird.
Yeah, that
but
it does.
We'll probably get to that later.
So I
met Ali at uni and Weaver afterwards, and at that point they were starting to do these kidnap things which involved taking bands to various places, and I was old enough to drive a van, a hire van, which is probably why I started doing it, and took my camera along, photographed the bands on the kidnaps, and like it kind of went from there, and I was just like, photographing bands is fun, and it seemed like a nice, and I had been playing in a band until not long before that, and it seemed like quite a nice way to stay involved in what was going on without, because I was playing in a band, but I was never had any talent as a musician, so it seemed like a nice way to be involved without having to show myself up on stage.
And so we'll delve more as the conversation goes on, but I guess I was saying to you, so your first song that I've asked you to pick six songs that have kind of almost been influential through your photographic career. When I say career, you're still very young, so you've still got some time to go. But the so Song of Return, who for me were very much a kind of core part of Glasgow through the people that were part of the band, and through elements such as Block and you know, just the kind of audience that they had as well. So why is this so, why are they so significant?
Partly for that reason.
Yeah.
They were such an important thing. So just to harp back very, very quickly, when I was at Stirling, I was involved in the student radio station, and I remember the Union of Nice Records came in to the student radio station, and I put it on, listened to it in the radio office, and I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is really special. And then fast forward a while, and we were doing Dieter stuff, and I was just like, ah, this is that. And a new form, or like a new band of the ashes of that kind of band. And they were just making really exciting music. There was a lot of stuff at that point in time which was like, it was quite good, but nothing that was like really exciting.
Yeah.
And that was a band that got me really, really excited about seeing them play live, especially, and seeing what they could do. Like, they were just so inventive, and they were making all these like great noises, and it's like, and everyone in the band was an important part of the band, you know.
Totally.
So
it was almost like an all-star lineup as well.
And Ricky.
Yeah, true.
Sorry. But yeah, no, totally. There's like amazing talent in the band, like Craig and Louis and Alex, that are all just awesome musicians. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so the reason I specifically picked Song of Return, apart from the fact that they were making great music, was they were quite, I don't know if I'd say prominent, but they featured in a lot of Dieter content. One of the kidnaps, which you mentioned earlier, was Song of Return. We took them to St. Peter's Seminary. Were you there that day?
I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Which was wild. Like, there's videos online, I'm sure you can still find them. But we took the band up to this abandoned seminary, like fallen apart, and idea was to get them to play in the afternoon. Took so long to set everything up, they ended up playing at night time in the dark. Everyone was shitting themselves when all the lights went off. It was pretty creepy. And it just felt like a really, really like special moment. Like, sometimes it's very hard when you're in whatever you're doing to really comprehend what it is you're doing, but that was one of these times when you're like, there's a lot of really good people here making really good stuff, and I just felt really lucky to be a part of it. Not that I like, at that point I wasn't a big part at all, because like, as I say, I was probably just a designated driver, but and I was just taking pictures on a like on my grandpa's old film camera, which at that point, which is what I was using to photograph Dieter stuff. So it seemed like a good starting point, because that was like one of the times when I felt really lucky to be a part of something interesting with a lot of really good people.
What do you miss most about that, apart from obviously the camaraderie and being with those people, but what else do you miss about that time?
The sense of not having any idea what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like the fear factor. Dieter was always and continues to be slightly fly by the seat of your pants. Don't ask permission, ask forgiveness kind of thing. That kind of fear factor of everything, like, I guess you get a bit older and things become a bit more sterile, and you play by the rules a bit more, especially when it becomes a job and when it becomes what you're doing. You need to, well, you don't need to, but I guess you sort of fall into playing by the rules a little bit more. But that kind of anything could happen feeling, a generator could pack in and it could all be a complete bust, or it could be one of the best things you've ever done.
Yeah. But I think that's what I miss so much about that is the, like you say, is the playing by the rules. I like to think that at times I still don't do that, and I certainly know that Weaver, I don't think, will ever completely play by the rules. And Ali to a certain degree, but yeah, I think you're right in the professionalism that you have to take on. But do you think that maybe by following those rules, it takes away from the kind of creativity of what you're trying to do?
Without doubt.
Yeah.
I guess you can look at this in like a macro and a micro sense, like in a wide sense. Yeah, like in terms of what you're doing with your life, like if you're playing by the rules, then you're playing by the rules,
mm-hmm.
and that is, it's always going to be within certain boundaries and within certain lines. And it's, I guess, the rule breakers that are the people that are the people that draw attention and the people that catch the imagination.
Yeah.
And on a micro sense, like day to day, like if you, so to talk about this from a photography point of view, but I guess it works with music or any kind of creativity, when you learn, you're told that these are the rules, like this is how you should compose something or this is how you should expose something, and you're like, yeah, that's fine, but all that creates is homogeneous work.
Mm-hmm.
So if everyone follows the rules to the letter, then everyone's going to end up producing the same work. I think it's much easier to break the rules on a micro sense. It's a bit harder to break them on a macro sense.
Yeah.
But I guess you need to do one to lead to the other.
Your next pick is Biffy Clyro. Why Biffy?
That's the question. Why Biffy? I don't know if this is the case for everyone, but like for a lot of people, I know that there was a band. You know, like there was the band that kind of made you interested in what was going on. So like when I was younger, like I don't know, like when I started, so I started uni when I was 17, and like I met people, and obviously when I moved in, they were like, oh, like they were putting records on, and as you do when you're 17, you're like exchanging what you knew, and like it was only at that point that I ever heard of the existence of Jeff Buckley. Like I'd never even experienced them before, you know, and it's just, that's a one example, but there didn't seem to be much in like around my school or around my group of friends that was especially broad musical. So it was very much like a kind of Britpop-y, like Suede were really adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was really outside the box. So I kind of grew up in a pretty safe musical environment, especially if, like my parents liked a lot of kind of like the Eagles.
Yeah.
Like the Eagles' Best Of was probably the most played record in our house, which is fine, but there wasn't much adventurous. And then I remember like I was in the kitchen of our halls in first year at uni, and we're listening to, what was her name, Vic and Jill?
Yeah,
Vic and Jill?
Yeah,
like way
yeah,
back.
Oh my god, that's such a long time ago.
Yeah, and they played, oh, what was it they played? They played a Biffy song from Black and Sky.
Yeah! Christmas special.
Yeah, there was like one of those moments when you're just like get excited about this. This is really cool. And yeah, then started going to see them and saw them like a bunch of times. Like more than I weighed off now. Yeah, and they were just like a really, really exciting band. Kind of like what I was saying about Song of Return earlier, is just like they're just what they do is exciting. Like everything that they seem to put their hand on just was really, really exciting. And kind of led me on to like loads of other music. Like they led me to like Sushi Opero and like a bunch of other bands.
When was the first time you photographed Biffy Clyro?
That's a good question. I'm trying to remember. It was at Rockness. I can't remember what year it was. But like I never photographed him until, like, I've only ever photographed them live. I didn't photograph them until they were huge. In fact, it was, I think, around the time when Many of Horror was, like, crazy. Because I remember like through a kind of fortuitous connection of a good friend of mine sort of working with the band, like I photographed like a couple of songs from the side of the stage that day. And I photographed a couple of songs and then they started playing Many of Horror, and like you just saw the entire crowd singing that song back, and it was like, even just now I'm like total goosebumps. And it's a good song objectively, but it's like not one of my favourite Biffy songs, but like absolute hair standing on ends everywhere in your body, and you're just like, holy shit, this band means a lot to a lot of people. And you can see like that, what you felt in so many other people, and it just becomes so like affirming. It's so nice.
Do you think that when you have photographed them live, that you have you've been happy that you've managed to capture the essence of what they are like live?
Wow, what a question.
I know, sorry.
No, it's all. I'm going to hum and haw over this one. It's interesting because what they are like live is, I guess, going to be very different as to how you see and how you feel about Biffy. The reason I'm humming and hawing is I'm really struggling to phrase this without sounding like a dick. But my like fondest memories of Biffy are like in rooms like up, like one time they played the Badlands and it was just like one of the most life-affirming gigs I've ever been to, and like you leave and you're like drenched in sweat and it was incredible. Like I'm obviously older now and like I don't go down the front of gigs because I'm like 6'4" and I'm conscious that there's like a lot of people behind me that are going to be like pissed off at this massive guy. So at any gig I don't really go down the front anymore, but if I go and see Biffy now, I'm like enjoying it from the back of the room, so it's like a very different experience for me now. So I don't know if I have ever got a shot of Biffy that kind of feels to me the way that they felt when I was like down the front in the Badlands, but that's maybe because I've only photographed them from being older. And I guess there's part of, as much as images of a band, there's part of what the photographer sees in each image, so maybe it's like how I've kind of approached it. Like I have some shots of Biffy that I absolutely love. Interestingly, I was just going through some old, maybe not interestingly, but some old work really recently, and I've pulled a lot of it out to post over the next like week or so, and there's a couple of Biffy shots that I really really like, that I'm a big fan of. But I don't know, like, how can you do justice to something that's like they're probably the band that has more than any other changed me,
right?
And to say that I've taken a photograph that equates to that, like, nah, probably not.
And just to go off on a bit of a tangent, the pits that you've been in, and you photographed live, what's been the best and what's been the worst?
The best and worst pit. Well, okay, so the worst. The worst is funny because like the worst ones are usually the most fun.
Right.
Or not usually, but can be the most fun. So one of the toughest. I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this right, but Ty Segall. I photographed in, what's it called? The captain's rest went and moved.
Oh, liquid
to
ship. Oh, no.
Like next to Sleazy's and stuff. I can't even.
Oh,
get the name.
Broadcast.
Broadcast, yeah, thanks. So like downstairs in Broadcast, and it was like absolutely rammed, and it was like for NME or Kerrang, I think, and it was winter and I was running late to the gig, and this is where winter becomes important because it was freezing. I get inside and you've got like what, 120-130 people in the room, absolutely rammed, really really sweaty, there's no pit in Broadcast, you're literally just like fighting with the people down the front, and there was a lot of bouncing. It was pretty raucous. And get the camera out and it's completely condensed, like there's just condensation on the sensor of the camera, so you're just like, all you can do in that situation is wait for it to go. So it's kind of lucky in that sense that there's no pit, so you're not subjected to the like this three song and you're out. Which you get in some bigger venues. But that was really good fun because you just kind of completely get into it was the crowd, and I didn't know a thing about the band at that time, but I've since become a fan of the band through that seeing them live. And yeah, it's like, it just becomes really, it's so much more rewarding when you get a shot from a show like that. Because I mean, you can go to Arcade Fire last night. I've not looked yet, but you'll see some amazing shots from that because there's an incredible production.
The light show looked unbelievable.
Yeah, I saw someone's a phone photo, and it looked like there was lasers, yeah, mirror lasers over. Recreating yeah. the boxing ring thing vibe mm-hmm. that they had going on. It looked incredible. But yeah, you'll see some amazing photographs of that. Because you can go into the Hydro and you can take really nice photographs of really nice production. And that's cool. That's totally a thing. But I think it's really rewarding when you get shots from a show that you're proud of.
Yeah.
When you get shots that you're proud of from a show that is especially hard to shoot. So that sticks out as one of the worst, but then maybe the best.
Yeah.
And best, I don't know, it depends what best means. Is best easy? Because sometimes easy is boring, you know?
I guess more from that you've just thought, I am so privileged to be here and take photos, and they've actually maybe turned out the way that you've wanted them to as well.
Yeah, do you know what? At the last incarnation of Tea in the Park, or the last Tea in the Park that happened, was that 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
I'd had the last day, I'd had a pretty rough day, and I'd been part of the territory of this team, the park, I'd been hitting the back and then the back of the head twice that day with flying drinks. So once foregraphing stiff little fingers, I got hit in the head with a beer bottle.
Shit.
And it was just I was just raging. I was just so angry. I was just why are people such dicks? And I went back to the porta cabin, and I was just I hate this, I hate it. And which is probably not what you should be saying to the people that are employing you to be there, but they're all good. And then I went back out to something again later on, and then I get a pint of, thankfully it was cold, a pint of cider down my back, so it's sticky, and you're just feeling gross, and you're just oh my god,
it could have been urine.
It could have been, yeah, and it has been in the past.
Oh, so wow.
It's fine. I got that at BDI 1 year. If it's
that pretty much sums up what you're gonna get at BDI.
But yeah, so I'd had a bit of an unenjoyable day, and then LCD. When you say life affirming, that's what's come into my head. And
yes, some of those are pending.
I didn't pick them as part of my six, but that was one of the last ones that got deleted before it became six.
I might just pop them in.
Yeah, totally. Go for it. is just incredible. Like, sometimes you're like, sometimes I'm photographing a gig and you'll get past the three songs, because like at festivals you're restricted to three songs and then you need to leave the pit. Sometimes you get past the three songs and I'm not really aware of what's happened. That happened a lot the first time I shot Tea in the Park. Like, I couldn't have told you what songs I had just photographed, but at LCD I was just like, the entire time, biggest smile on my face.
Yeah.
And I think that came across in the photographs that I took of that set. I'm really happy with a lot of the photographs I got that day. It's the first time I photographed him. First time I'd actually seen him play live, and there was hardly anybody there. Did you see pictures of that?
I did, and they're one of my favourite artists, and I've seen them quite a few times live now, and the last time being the Barrowlands, and we'd seen the pictures and we were, I think, horrified might be the term. But the Barrowlands made up for that. Two nights. Imagine.
You messaged me about picking these songs and I started the process of narrowing down a list, and I put on All My Friends, I think, on the list, and then I was just like, actually, I wanted to put it on because I wanted to talk about that live experience of photographing LCD. So I was like, let's put on the live version. So I put on the version, the Madison Square Garden version, and then I was like, let's put on the album, and just put on that live album, and just went out a walk, and you're just like, this is
incredible.
This,
So this one kind of stood out for me. So King Ayasoba, and apparently fairly big in Ghana. So tell me about him.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about him, to be honest. So the reason I picked King Ayasoba is the live show, and I guess we've spoken a lot about live so far, but affirming is one of the adjectives that you would use to describe this. I had no idea what I was going into. It was a Celtic Connection show a couple of years ago at Platform in Glasgow, which does really, really interesting stuff. There's like amazing people working there. Platform and Easter House.
Yeah, and I just, we should point out Alan Woodward from Chemical does amazing curations
great work there.
And the team.
Yeah, such a good guy as well.
Amazing man.
I went along and I was actually photographing, I think, three or four shows at Platform during Celtic Connections for Platform for them to use. And one of the shows that they picked out was this King Ayasoba. And sometimes I'll like do a bit of research and go into a show like expecting what to hear what's going to happen. I looked at some pictures and I was like, yeah, it looks like it's fun, but that sounds really patronising. It looks fun, but yeah, it looked like a fun show, so I was just like I'm just going to go along and just shoot what happens rather than going in with any expectation of what I should do. I'm just going to go along and shoot what I see, and it was incredible. Like, I stayed for the entire show, like, dancing with the people in the room. And it's like, it was just, you know, sometimes you get gigs and people are kind of, like, nodding along and they're, like, too cool to be there. Everybody was having the time of their life.
Yeah.
The support, I couldn't tell you who the support was, but the support was amazing as well, and came out and did some songs with King Ayasoba. And, yeah, it was just an incredible thing. And it's, like, part of what I love about photography and music photography especially is like I'm getting into rooms that I would never otherwise go into, for a reason, so that you have this kind of like permission to be in the room and to almost kind of be a bit of a voyeur as to this other world that you don't know or that you're not a part of, and you get to like dip your toes into that world for an hour and be a part of it, and like almost always you're just accepted into this world. And that's one of the best examples I've had of that. It's just,
yeah,
it was incredible, and I just left absolutely beaming.
Yabba Mabba, African leaders, get up.
Forward.
Would you say that you have a certain style of photography that when you say that, you know, that's that privilege almost of the voyeurism within that, would you say that your photography, because I mean your Instagram, you have been doing so, you've been putting up shots of several different projects that you've done, and for me you really capture the kind of an essence of someone, but you capture kind of a different side or a trueness about someone. There's something that really comes through in those photos. So is that something that you would like to feel stylistically that you go for?
I'm tearing up a bit. thank you very much, first of all. If I was to try and define what I wanted to do, it would be along those lines, mm-hmm. like trying to tap into, because I don't really do so much live music anymore. I've just kind of fallen away from doing the live stuff, and I really like spending a bit more time with people. My photographs are almost always of people. That's just absolutely what interests me and sort of fascinates me, and the fact that every person has so much going on that you don't know about. Just trying to sort of tap into wherever a person is at that moment that you find them to photograph.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily like to take people to a specific place to, metaphorically. So I don't like saying, right, I want you to feel sad, or I want you to feel like this. It's more, tapping into where a person is at that moment. Because you know that thing, you'll see people that you kind of know and you say, oh, how are you doing? You're like, I'm fine. And inside you're drowning, you know? People don't talk about how they are, which is a shame. And we were kind of talking about this before we started recording, is something I've been very conscious of recently. People don't always open up. But when they're in this situation of having a camera and you're sitting for a portrait, it's initially a bit of a weird situation, but then I find that people are a bit more willing to open up in the right environment, and
which is quite strange
in
itself.
It's really strange. It's really, really strange.
And do you think that that's because they're so exposed that they just think, well, I've got nothing to lose here?
I think a lot of it has to do with interaction between subject and photographer, and this comes back to sort of following and breaking the rules again. It's like there's this idea that if you're taking somebody's portrait, you should be there to make them feel as comfortable as possible.
Yeah.
And Annie Leibovitz has a really, I'll butcher the quote, but she says something really interesting. It's like, it's not my job to make them feel comfortable, it's my job to make a true portrait of them.
Yeah.
So if that involves them being uncomfortable, then so be it. So I'm not really sure why people are more willing to open up. It would be nice to think that it was something to do with me, but it might just be that they are willing to. It could just be the people I photograph are really interesting.
It must be testament to your character if you know those shots are coming out in that way, and can be interpreted that way. Vashti Bunyan. I have to say that there's a couple of songs that I've thought, it's kind of 50-50. Some of the songs I was expecting the artist to be on there, but Vashti Bunyan just was another one that I was quite surprised by.
I'm running out of adjectives. I feel like I'm just describing everything as incredible and awesome. And, she's one of the most intriguing people I've ever met. She's unbelievable. I'm working on this project, like kind of an ongoing project, where I'm photographing musicians who then pass me on to the next person in the series, if you like. So,
oh, wow.
And it all kind of stemmed from in a sense what Song of Return was like a collection of musicians who work in other bands. You know, like there's people in Song of Return from Amro Fallow and Moth in the Mirror, and so there just seemed to be this community in Scotland where musicians would dip in and out of other bands, and I don't know if it's exclusive to Scotland, but it certainly seems like it's a really, really strong element of what happens here. So this kind of sprung up from the Dieter days of bands playing with other bands and all this kind of crossover. So I started photographing musicians and then said to them, so the only kind of remit is that I want someone that you are inspired by, friends with, like have worked with, something along those lines, and for logistical and cost reasons, like based in Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And this led to me photographing Vashti Bunyan, which was, so I'd photographed Neil Pennycook of Murso.
Yeah.
Another person who could easily feature in this list. He picked Vashti and he said, I don't have any way of getting in touch with her. I don't know anything about her other than I know she is based in Scotland. So I did some research and found that her last release had been through Fat Cat Records, who I've done a bunch of work for. Got in touch with them and asked if they could put me in touch, and went through some other people who I thought might be able to help. And for months, like, this project has been going on for a while because getting in touch with people and hearing back from people takes a long time. I hadn't heard anything, and I was close to going back to Neil and saying, can we go a different route, because I've hit a brick wall with Vashti.
Just another diamond day, just a blade of grass, just another bale of hay, and the horses pass. La 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 la. Just another field to plow, just a grain of wheat, just a sack of seed to sow, and the children eat. La 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 la. Just another life to live, just a word to say, just another love to give, and a diamond day. La 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 la.
And then one day I get a notification on my phone and it's like, hello from Vashti. I'm like, shit. and yeah, like such an icon of that time and that genre, I guess. She's so hospitable. Like, I was in her house for hours. Not photographing, but like we sat and drank tea and chatted for such a long time.
Yeah.
Such a lovely, lovely person, and incredible stories.
Yeah.
Like, she's a storyteller. She's one of the things that has really stuck with me is we were talking about, or there's a photo wall in her studio. She has a studio in our house with a photo wall, and there's a story of her travelling the length of the UK in a horse-drawn caravan. And there was a picture of a caravan, so I asked, is that the caravan you did the journey in? And so it kind of got her on to talking about that. And I was like, so how long did this take to journey from the south coast of England to the Hebrides? And she kind of paused and thought, two summers and one winter. I was like, see, if you're measuring time and seasons, you're killing it.
Oh my God.
And she's so, so lovely. Like, I couldn't do her enough justice.
Mm-hmm.
In words to explain what a great person she is. Absolutely fascinating.
She really came into my stream because of Joe Mango and mm-hmm. Adam. So, I've obviously heard her music, and I've seen various really beautiful photographs of her. She's another one of those people that when you see pictures of them, there's something really quite striking and intriguing about them. The question I wanted to ask you, I mean, I know that you've recently become a father and you're married and so on, and you've obviously got your family in it, and again, through your social media, you've taken photos of that unit. Aside from those people very close to you, has there been a kind of a person or a photograph that you've taken that's really moved you that you didn't expect?
Yes, like immediately yes. The only hesitation I have is I don't know if it's something I should necessarily talk about. Those photographs of Ashley were a point where I felt very lucky to be in the situation I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really, really happy with the photographs that I got, which is unusual because I usually will edit the photographs and finish them and then be like, I should have done this or I should have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fairly natural. But I'm pretty happy with what I got from those photographs. In terms of photographs that I've taken that have moved me out with my kind of tiny personal world. Yeah, there's like a photograph I took last year of a friend's mum who isn't so well. And that's a photograph that I'm really glad I took. And I really like it. And like when I see it, I kind of feel like it kind of really tugs at me. And I'm glad to have taken it, but yeah.
Is there a sense of kind of fulfillment that you are documenting these people's lives and you're creating these timestamps to reflect on?
Yeah, absolutely. Like it's very easy when you're working in this world to get lost in your own kind of ego and think about why you're doing things and like, am I doing this for me or am I doing this to try and get some Instagram likes or whatever, you know, like it's very easy to get caught up in that. But when you're able to step out of that and appreciate what a photograph could and might become one day, then yeah, like it is a real privilege to have the chance to create something that will maybe one day reflect a person, a period of time in their lives.
So prides are obviously very much the people within prides, which is your next pick, are very much of the group that you have kind of grown with and you know, socialised with and so on. And they've been through quite a journey themselves as well. I can understand why you've picked them, but there might be another reason why you've picked them.
I think the remit for my selections was songs that have
shaped
my musical, or not my musical, shaped my kind of journey, for want of a better word. And there probably aren't many other bands that have shaped it quite as much as Prides in whatever form they've taken.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of first came across some elements of Prides when I was at uni, and like I said, I was involved in student radio station, and we, for a club night that we ran, booked Drive By Argument. Which was, I think, the first iteration of, Stuart and Lewis.
Were
in there. And yeah, I really enjoyed him. And I remember hearing him on a Jim Gillily show on whatever platform he was on at that point. And yeah, they were creating like fun music that was really enjoyable. And down the line, I kind of got to know them when they were Midnight Lion. And got to know Callum, who would later join through sort of various friends. So like, I've been sort of friends with the guys over the years and did a bunch of work, and only really started doing work with them when they became Prides. They've been quite an important part of my work over the past few years, just because they have placed a lot of trust in me. Like, they haven't questioned what I've done, and some, like, obviously when you bring in labels and you start to sort of, there's a lot of second guessing going on, but
yeah.
The band themselves are, I've got a really good relationship with, and yeah, like they were the kind of first band that I kind of really delved into in terms of photographing them, and like spent a lot of time with them out west. Like, here's our kind of hour long shoot to get some new press shots. Like, I spent a bunch of time with them, and it was really interesting to see the kind of inner workings and They're probably not like a lot of other bands. They're quite unique.
There's a kiss in the kitchen, ice cold. There's a slow dance in the fireplace, so slow. There's the talk of how we'll be when we're old. There's a thing that we have, two puzzle pieces born to be whole. Two puzzle pieces born to be whole. Like the tide, constant in and out, one man's unwavering fight. You never did stand for my shit, and you challenge every word, even as I hold on to it. There's a smile in the mirror frame, gold. There's a toothpaste grin laughing at your own jokes. There's a talk of how we'll be when we're old. There's a thing that we have, two puzzle pieces born to be whole. Two puzzle pieces born to be whole. I don't tell me there's so much I want to tell you. But damn it, it's so hard for me to say. Well, I've never known too much, but here's a hopeful hushing tug. Cause I would love to see you every single day. Every single day. And arms crossed, imaginations run wild. There's a touch on the table, it's impeccable style. There's red lips on balconies and shouting in the street. There's a kiss as the lift closed. There's a day spent in sheets. There's a cannonball firework, comic confetti. There's a promise, a photograph, empty seat that you kept for me. So watching you do makeup, a mate for my soul. See, there's things that we have, two puzzle pieces born to be whole. And everybody knows, two puzzle pieces born to be whole. So much I want to tell you. But damn it, it's so hard for me to say. Well, I've never known too much, but here's a hopeful hushing tug. Cause I would love to see you every single day. Every single day. Too much, but here's a hopeful hushing tug. Cause I would love to see you every single day. Every single day.
So there's this kind of idea of going out touring with a band. Like, I guess a lot of young photographers have this. It's quite a kind of mythologized profession, is to go on tour with the band and photograph them. And I remember one time I was in like a Wotherspoons in somewhere in the middle of England with Pride's, and there was like a show that night, and there was nothing to do during the day, and we were all just sitting around a table and Witherspoons and our laptops, and I was just like, living the dream. But yeah, like, it's funny because they're extremely hardworking and they are extremely passionate about what they do, and they mean a lot to quite a lot of people as well, and that's something that's really interesting to see close up, is when a band is making a significant impact on someone's life. And like, sometimes music, when it's not your cup of tea, it's kind of easy to dismiss as maybe less significant in someone's life than something would be to your own if it's not like your music. But yeah, it kind of really opened my eyes to see the people that were coming up to them and like telling them stories of what their music had done for them and what it's meant to them, which is really nice. And I think there's something that's really been that Stuart's kind of captured quite well in their most recent releases, is this kind of idea of story, and not just story in a kind of Bob Dylan telling a story through the verses of the song, but the kind of slightly more underlying story of why the song exists in the first place. Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting stuff there that I think isn't always as obvious on the surface, and that's something that I had a lot of fun. Like, I've done some stuff with them recently. Like, I did the cover stuff for their recent releases, which was an experience, which that's like a whole other story into itself. Yeah, I spent a lot of time doing some work that I'm really happy with, and I feel like they're like a significant like benchmark in my kind of career.
And I'm hesitant to use the word, but is there a sense of pride there because they are they're your friends as well?
Yeah, like, it's absolutely. Like, I think that probably happens quite a lot in this kind of fairly small,
incestuous,
kind of Scottish community of music. Like, when you see someone doing well, like, you just like want to punch the air and give them a hug and say congratulations. And yeah, that, I mean, that's absolutely the case with Pride. Like, when, like, I want those guys to do well in the same way that I want any sort of, well, maybe not any, but like people that I recognise and I'm close to, which is a lot through just what I do.
Yeah.
I want to see them do well and progress. And yeah.
Before going to your last track, so where is your career now? Where have things kind of come to? What point are you at?
You're kind of catching me at quite an interesting time that is full of existential doubt and crises. So as you mentioned earlier, I've just had a daughter a couple of months ago. And yeah, she's flipped things.
Yeah, quite.
Flipped everything on its head. I got married in 2016, then had the wee girl in February this year. Yeah, like, so the past 2 months have been quite quiet in terms of work. And then, in fact, probably more than the last 2 months, probably since the tail end of last year, have been fairly quiet, just as we've sort of started to sort of prepare, or what we thought was preparation. Turns out it was not even close to preparation. I kind of banked on that quiet time as to have a bit of time for reflection, which I kind of try and do fairly often, and just to sort of look at where I am, and what I'm doing and what I want to do. It doesn't always end up with me being in a good place, you know.
Yeah.
There are lots of car journeys with friends to the Highlands, talking about what the hell we're doing with our lives, and what we want to do, where we should be going. And
I think that's a lot of people at the moment, to be honest.
It's interesting because, like, the work that I love doing, and it's kind of work that you've referenced and have been really kind about it today, is not necessarily the work that is paying my bills.
Yeah.
Which I guess happens in a lot of worlds, you know. There's a lot of instances of that being the case. So I do a bunch of work that satisfies the financial aspects that comes with it being work, and yeah, that's kind of why I said right at the start that professional is quite a loaded word, because professional ultimately just means that you make your living from it, which can be a bit of a poison chalice at times.
Yeah.
There's a lot of there's a lot of days that I think it might be nice to have no pressure on the camera, and it to just be a fun thing. That being said, it's never not been a fun thing for me. I mean, there are jobs that I've done that don't see the light of day and will never see my website or social media.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they're like there's anything wrong with them, just because it's not something I'm especially interested in. So there are dry days, but then like it's always, you always just need to kind of ground yourself and say like people are paying me to do this, so you need to sort of be appreciative of that fact. But yeah, where am I right now is a really big question, and honestly I don't have an answer. I don't think I've ever had an answer for that question. If I spend enough time thinking about it, I always want to be somewhere other than where I am in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how that reflects on me. I don't know what a psychologist would say about that. But
I think it's just a completely natural emotion, to be honest.
I've never had any kind of doubt as to what is driving me to do this, because I absolutely love it, and it's fulfilling on an almost daily basis.
Trevor Morrison, Herta. So is this taken from Lost Songs of St Kilda?
It is, yes.
Yeah. So you're, again, to reference your group of friends, you're very much about nature and the outdoors, and you really relish that as well. Is that fair to say?
100%.
So is this got a connection to this? Why you picked this?
Not really, actually, but that's interesting that that's what you took from it. This is on the list because I was commissioned to make a film about this album, and the incarnation of this album, essentially. It's kind of hard to tell my story without briefly telling the story of the album, so I'll do that as briefly as I can. Trevor Morrison was an elderly man in a care home in Edinburgh, who was very kind of reclusive, and one day sat down at the piano in the care home, started playing this music, and a couple of people in the care home were like, that's really, really beautiful, what is that? And he's like, oh, someone taught me this when I was a child, it's music from St Kilda, which was an island, the most remote inhabited place in Scotland at the time. It's not inhabited anymore. They spoke to people about this, some people came in and recorded this music. It found its way to a record label who decided they wanted to release this music. He sadly passed away before the record came out, before I got the chance to meet him as well. There was some documentation around what he'd been doing, and I and another guy were commissioned to work on this film to accompany the record release. As we learned about him, we just got lost in this warren of fascinating stories. So he'd been a lot of this is very, not contentious, but like people don't necessarily believe the story, which ultimately led to the fact that the film was never released because people contended that it wasn't legitimately music from St Kilda after it had been released.
Wow.
It was one of the most interesting projects I've worked on, and led to me spending some time on St Kilda. Some very brief time on St Kilda. Meeting a lot of really interesting people, and it kind of felt a bit like detective work. We were sort of diving into this guy's life and trying to find connections to people, and found people that he knew who said he knew a lady called Mary used to come and visit him. So then we were away to try and find this woman called Mary, and we end up in Mary's kitchen.
Oh my God.
Interviewing her and hearing all these incredible stories about Trevor. And yeah, he's a character for sure. He's a really interesting guy. He lived in Uganda for a while teaching, and he was quite a prolific writer as well, and he has a lot of letters and poetry lodged at the National Library in Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time in Edinburgh reading files and files of his poetry, and he'd spent time in Afghanistan helping people over the border from Pakistan, and just this crazy life, and he has this, he kind of disappeared in the 80s, as like I think quite a few people did, but he kind of lost track of him and then pick him back up in Edinburgh in the 90s, and he's, which is when he met Mary. But yeah, he, I got very emotionally attached to Trevor over the course of this, like I probably worked on this project for, I think it was the May I started and delivered it in November, so whatever that is. So it's probably the longest I've worked on a single project and got very, very emotionally attached. And when I was on St Kilda, I felt like a real sense of connection with him and the place. The song that I have added onto my list is called Herta, which is one of the islands of the archipelago that's St Kilda, which is the island that I was, or the landmass that I was actually on for a few hours when I would go over there. So yeah, incredible place. And it's like another one of these, like, it's, I didn't really think about this when I made the list, but like talking about them, there's quite a few that are kind of really making me making me feel it again.
Yeah, thank you so much. You are so interesting to talk to, and I hope that I've always been a fan, but the stuff that you're doing going forward is really intriguing, so I can't wait to see how things unfold, and I wish you and your new family all the best.